The anger leapt out of a young man to my left, a farm boy, about 17.
None of this would have happened if you hadn't been running around like some rue whore!
I broke his arm before I quite realized what I was doing. He screamed as he fell to the ground. I pulled him to his feet by the scruff of his neck. What's your name? I snarled into his face.
My arm!
He gasped, his eyes showing me their whites. I shook him like a rag doll.
Name! Jason! He blurted. God's mother, my arm!
I took his chin in my free hand and turned his face toward Kryn and El.
Jason, I hissed quietly in his ear, I want you to look at those girls. And I want you to think about the hell they've been through in these past days, tied hand and foot in the back of a wagon. And I want you to ask yourself what's worse, a broken arm or getting kidnapped by a stranger and raped 4 times a night?
Then I turned his face toward me and spoke so quiet that even an inch away it was hardly a whisper.
After you've thought of that, I want you to pray to God to forgive you for what you just said. And if you mean it, Teilu grant your arm heal straight and true.
His eyes were terrified and wet.
After that, if you ever think an unkind thought about either of them, your arm will ache like there's hot iron in the bone. And if you ever say an unkind word, it will go to fever and slow rot, and they'll have to cut it off to save your life.
I tightened my grip on him, watching his eyes widen.
And if you ever do anything to either of them, I'll know. I will come here and kill you and leave your body hanging in a tree.
There were tears on his face now, although whether from shame or fear or pain, I couldn't guess.
Now you tell her you're sorry for what you said.
I let go of him after making sure he had his feet under him and pointed him in the direction of Kryn and El. The women stood around them like a protective cocoon. He clutched his arm weakly.
I shouldn't have said that, Ellie,
he sobbed, sounding more wretched and repentant than I would have thought possible, broken arm or no.
It was a demon talking out of me. I swear, though, I've been sick worrying. We all been, and we did try to come get you, but there was a lot of them, and they jumped us on the road. Then we had to bring Bill home, or he would have died from his leg.
Something tickled my memory about the boy's name. Jason?
I suddenly suspected I had just broken El's boyfriend's arm. Somehow, I couldn't feel bad for it just now. Best thing for him, really. Looking around, I saw the anger bleed out of the faces of the men around me, as if I'd used up the whole town's supply in a sudden furious flash. Instead, they watched Jason, looking slightly embarrassed, as if the boy were apologizing for the lot of them. Then I saw a big, healthy-looking man running down the street, followed by a dozen other townsfolk. From the look on his face, I guessed it was El's father, the mayor. He forced his way into the knot of women, gathered his daughter up in his arms, and swung her around. You find 2 types of mayor in small towns like this. The first type are balding older men of considerable girth who are good with money and tend to wring their hands a great deal when anything unexpected happens. The second type are tall, broad-shouldered men whose families have grown slowly prosperous because they had worked like angry bastards behind a plow for 20 generations. El's father was the second sort. He walked over to me, keeping one arm around his daughter's shoulders.
I understand I have you to thank for bringing our girls back.
He reached out to shake my hand, and I saw his arm was bandaged. His grip was solid in spite of it. He smiled the widest smile I'd seen since I left Simon at the university. How's the arm? I asked, not realizing how it would sound. His smile faded a little, and I was quick to add, I've had some training as a physicker, and I know that those sort of things can be tricky to deal with when you're away from home. When you're living in a country that thinks mercury is medicine, I thought to myself. His smile came back, and he flexed his fingers.
It's stiff, but that's all. Just a little meat. They caught us by surprise. I got my hands on one of them, but he stuck me and got away. How did you end up getting the girls away from those godless rue bastards?
he spat. "They weren't Edema Rue," I said, my voice sounding more strained than I would have liked. "They weren't even real troopers." His smile began to fade again.
"What do you mean?"
"They weren't Edema Rue. We don't do the things they did."
"Listen," the mayor said plainly, his temper starting to rise a bit. "I know damn well what they do and don't do. They came in all sweet and nice, played a little music, made a penny or two. Then they started to make trouble around town. When we told them to leave, they took my girl."
He almost breathed fire as he said the last words.
"We?"
I heard someone say faintly behind me.
"Jim, he said we!"
Seth scowled around the side of the mayor to get a look at me again.
"I told you he looked like one," he said triumphantly. "I know him. You can always tell by them eyes." "Hold on," the mayor said with slow incredulity. "Are you telling me you're one of them?"
His expression grew dangerous. Before I could explain myself, Elle had grabbed his arm.
"Oh, don't make him mad, Daddy," she said quickly, holding on to his good arm as if to pull him away from me. "Don't say anything to get him angry. He's not with them. He brought me back. He saved me."
The mayor seemed somewhat mollified by this, but his congeniality was gone.
"Explain yourself," he said grimly.
I sighed inside, realizing what a mess I'd made of this. "They weren't troopers, and they certainly weren't Edema Rue. They were bandits who killed some of my family and stole their wagons. They were only pretending to be performers."
"Why would anyone pretend to be Rue?"
the mayor asked, as if the thought were incomprehensible.
"So they could do what they did," I snapped. "You let them into your town, and they abused that trust. That's something no Edema Rue would ever do."
"You never did answer my question," he said. "How did you get the girls away?"
"I took care of things," I said simply.
"He killed them," Kryn said loudly enough for everyone to hear. "He killed them all."
I could feel everyone looking at me. Half of them were thinking, "All of them? He killed 7 men?" The other half were thinking, "There were 2 women with them. Did he kill them too?"
"Well then,"
the mayor looked down at me for a long moment.
"Good," he said, as if he had just made up his mind. "That's good. The world's a better place for it."
I felt everyone relax slightly. "These are their horses." I pointed to the 2 horses that had been carrying our baggage. "They belong to the girls now. About 40 miles east, you'll find the wagons. Kryn can show you where they're hidden. They belong to the girls, too."
"They'll fetch a good price off in Thamesford," the mayor mused.
"Together with the instruments and clothes and such, they'll fetch a heavy penny," I agreed. "Split 2 ways, it'll make a fine dowry," I said firmly. He met my eyes, nodded slowly in understanding.
"That it will."
"What about the things they stole from us?"
a stout man in an apron protested.
"They smashed up my place and stole 2 barrels of my best ale."
"Do you have any daughters?" I asked him calmly. The sudden stricken look on his face told me he did. I met his eye, held it. "Then I think you came away from this pretty well." The mayor finally noticed Jason clutching his broken arm.
"What happened to you?"
Jason looked at his feet, and Seth spoke up for him.
"He said some things he shouldn't."
The mayor looked around and saw that getting more of an answer would involve an ordeal. He shrugged and let it go. "I could splint it for you," I said easily.
"No!"
Jason said too quickly, then backpedaled.
"I'd rather go to Gran."
I gave a sideways look to the mayor.
"Gran?"
He gave a fond smile.
"When we scrape our knees, Gran patches us back up again."
"Would Bill be there?" I asked. "The man with the crushed leg?" He nodded.
She won't let him out of her sight for another span of days if I know her.
I'll walk you over, I said to the sweating boy who was carefully cradling his arm. I'd like to watch her work.
As far from civilization as we were, I expected Gran to be a hunched old woman who treated her patients with leeches and wood alcohol. That opinion changed when I saw the inside of her house. Her walls were covered with bundles of dry herbs and shelves lined with small, carefully labeled bottles. There was a small desk with three heavy leather books on it. One of them lay open, and I recognized it as the Herborica. I could see handwritten notes scrawled in the margins, while some of the entries had been edited or crossed out entirely. Gran wasn't as old as I'd thought she'd be, though she did have her share of gray hair. She wasn't hunched either, and actually stood taller than me, with broad shoulders and a round, smiling face. She swung a copper kettle over the fire, humming to herself. Then she brought out a pair of shears and sat Jason down, prodding his arm gently. Pale and sweating, the boy kept up a constant stream of nervous chatter while she methodically cut his shirt away. In the space of a few minutes, without her even asking, he'd given her an accurate, if somewhat disjointed, version of Elle and Kryn's homecoming.
"It's a nice, clean break," she said at last, interrupting him. "How'd it happen?"
Jason's wild eyes darted to me, then away.
"Nothing,"
he said quickly, then realized he hadn't answered the question.
"I mean..."
"I broke it," I said. Figured the least I could do was come along and see if there's anything I could do to help set it right again. Gran looked back at me.
"Have you dealt with this sort of thing before?"
"I've studied medicine at the university," I said. She shrugged.
"Then I guess you can hold the splints while I wrap 'em. I have a girl who helps me, but she run off when she heard the commotion up the street."
Jason eyed me nervously as I held the wood tight to his arm, but it took Gran less than 3 minutes to bind up the splint with an air of bored competence. Watching her work, I decided she was worth more than half the students I could name in the Medica. After we'd finished, she looked down at Jason.
"You're lucky," she said. "It didn't need to be set. You hold off using it for a month. It should heal up just fine."
Jason left as quickly as he was able, and after a small amount of persuasion, Gran let me see Bill, who was laid up in her back room. If Jason's arm was a clean break, then Bill's was messy as a break can be. Both the bones in his lower leg had broken in several places. I couldn't see under the bandages, but his leg was hugely swollen. The skin above the bandages was bruised and mottled, stretched as tight as an overstuffed sausage. Bill was pale but alert, and it looked like he would probably keep the leg. How much use it would be was another matter. He might come away with nothing more than a heavy limp, but I wouldn't bet on him ever running again.
"What sort of folks shoot a man's horse?"
he asked indignantly, his face covered in a sheen of sweat.
"It ain't right."
It had been his own horse, of course, and this wasn't the sort of town where folk had horses to spare. Bill was a young man with a new wife and his own small farm, and he might never walk again because he had tried to do the right thing. It hurt to think about. Gran gave him 2 spoonfuls of something from a brown bottle, and it dragged his eyes shut. She ushered us out of the room and closed the door behind her.
"Did the bone break the skin?"
I asked once the door was closed. She nodded as she put the bottle back on the shelf.
"What have you been using to keep it from going septic?"
"Sour, you mean?" she asked. "Ram's burr."
"Really?" I asked. "Not arrowroot?"
"Arrowroot?"
she snorted as she added wood to the fire and swung the now steaming kettle off of it.
"You ever tried to keep something from going sour with arrowroot?"
"No,"
I admitted.
"Let me save you the trouble of killing someone, then."
She brought out a pair of wooden cups.
"Arrowroot is useless. You can eat it if you like, but that's about it."
"But a paste of arrowroot and besame is supposed to be ideal for this."
"Besame might be worth half a damn," she admitted, "but ram's burr is better. I'd rather have some red blade, but we can't always have what we want. A paste of mother leaf and ram's burr is what I use, and you can see he's doing just fine. Arrowroot is easier for folk to find, and it pulps smooth, but it ain't got any worthwhile properties.
She shook her head.
Arrowroot and camphor. Arrowroot and besame. Arrowroot and saltbine. Arrowroot ain't a palliative of any sort. It's just good at carrying around what works.
I opened my mouth to protest, then looked around her house, at her heavily annotated copy of the Herborica. I closed my mouth. Gran poured hot water from the kettle into two cups.
"Sit yourself down for a bit," she said. "You look like you're on your last leg."
I looked longingly at the chair. "I should probably be getting back," I said.
"You've got time for a cup,"
she said, taking my arm and setting me firmly into the chair.
"And a quick bite. Your pail is a dry bone, and I've a bit of sweet pudding here that ain't got anybody to give it a home."
I tried to remember if I'd eaten any lunch today. I remembered feeding the girls. "I don't want to put you to any more trouble," I said. "I've already made more work for you."
"About time somebody broke that boy's arm," she said conversationally. "Has a mouth on him like you wouldn't believe."
She handed me one of the wooden cups.
"Drink that down, and I'll get you some of that pudding."
The steam coming off the cup smelled wonderful.
"What's in it?" I asked.
"Rose hip, and some apple brandy I still up my own self."
She gave a wide smile that crinkled the edges of her eyes.
"If you like, I can put in some arrowroot, too."
I smiled and sipped. The warmth of it spread through my chest, and I felt myself relax a bit, which was odd, as I hadn't realized I'd been tense before. Gran bustled about a bit before setting two plates on the table and easing herself down into a nearby chair.
"You really kill those folk?" she asked plainly.
There wasn't any accusation in her voice. It was just a question. I nodded.
"You probably shouldn't have told anyone," she said. "There's bound to be a fuss. They'll want a trial and have to bring in the Azzy from Thamesford."
"I didn't tell them," I said. Kryn did.
"Ah," she said.
The conversation lulled. I drank the last swallow out of my cup, but when I tried to set it on the table, my hands were shaking so badly that it knocked against the wood, making a sound like an impatient visitor at the door. Gran sipped calmly from her cup.
"I don't care to talk about it," I said at last. "It wasn't a good thing."
"Some folk might argue that," she said gently. "I think you done the right thing."
Her words brought a sudden hot ache behind my eyes, as if I were about to burst into tears.
"I'm not so sure about that," I said, my voice sounding strange in my own ears. My hands were shaking worse now.
Gran didn't seem surprised by this.
"You've had the bit in your teeth for a couple days now, haven't you?"
Her tone made it clear it wasn't really a question.
"I know the look. You've been keeping busy, looking after the girls. Not sleeping, probably not eating much."
She picked up the plate.
"Eat your pudding. It will help to get some food in you."
I ate the pudding. Halfway through, I began to cry, choking a bit as it stuck in my throat. Gran refilled my cup with more tea and poured another dollop of brandy in on top of it.
"Drink that down," she repeated.
I took a swallow. I didn't mean to say anything, but I found myself talking anyway.
"I think there might be something wrong with me," I said quietly. "A normal person doesn't have it in him to do the things I do. A normal person would never kill people like this."
"That may be," she admitted, sipping from her own cup. "But what would you say if I told you Bill's leg had gone a bit green and sweet-smelling under that bandage?"
I looked up, startled. "He's got the rot?" She shook her head.
"No, I told you he's fine. But what if?"
"We'd have to cut the leg off," I said. Gran nodded seriously.
"That's right. And we'd have to do it quick. today. No dithering about and hoping he'd fight his way through on his own. That wouldn't do a thing but kill him.
She took a sip, watching me over the top of her cup, making it a question of sorts. I nodded. I knew it was true.
You've got some medicine, she said. You know that proper doctoring means hard choices.
She gave me an unflinching look.
We ain't like other folk. You burn a man with an iron to stop his bleeding. You save the mother and lose the babe. It's hard and nobody ever thanks you for it. But we're the ones that have to choose.
She took another slow drink of tea.
The first few times are the worst. You'll get the shakes and lose some sleep, but that's the price of doing what needs to be done.
There were women, too, I said, the words catching in my throat. Gran's eyes flashed.
They earned it twice as much, she said,
and the sudden furious anger in her sweet face caught me so completely by surprise that I felt prickling fear crawl over my body.
A man who would do that to a girl is like a mad dog. He ain't hardly a person. Just an animal needs to be put down. But a woman who helps him do it? That's worse. She knows what she's doing. She knows what it means.
Gran put her cup down gently on the table, her expression composed again.
If a leg goes bad, you cut it off.
She made a firm gesture with the flat of her hand, then picked up her slice of pudding and began to eat it with her fingers.
And some folk need killing. That's all there is to it.
By the time I got myself under control and made it back outside, the crowd in the street had swelled. The local tavern keeper had rolled a barrel onto his front landing, and the air was sweet with the smell of beer. Kryn's father and mother had ridden back into town on the roan. Pete was there, too, having run back. He offered up his unbroken head for my inspection and demanded his 2 pennies for services rendered. I was warmly thanked by Kryn's parents. They seemed to be good people. Most people are, if given the chance. I caught hold of the roan's reins, and using him as a sort of portable wall, I managed to get a moment of relatively private conversation with Kryn. Her dark eyes were a little red around the edges, but her face was bright and happy.
Make sure you get Lady Ghost, I said, nodding to one of the horses. She's yours.
The mayor's daughter would have a fair dowry no matter what, so I'd loaded Kryn's horse with the more valuable goods, as well as most of the false trooper's money. Her expression grew serious as she met my eyes, and again she reminded me of a young Denna.
You're leaving? She said.
I guess I was. She didn't try to convince me to stay, and instead surprised me with a sudden embrace. After kissing me on the cheek, she whispered in my ear,
"Thank you."
We stepped away from each other, knowing propriety would only allow so much. "Don't sell yourself short and marry some fool," I said, feeling as if I should say something.
"Don't you either," she said, her dark eyes mocking me gently.
I took Greytail's reins and led her over to where the mayor stood, watching the crowd in a proprietary way. He nodded as I approached. I drew a deep breath. "Is the constable about?" He raised an eyebrow at this, then shrugged and pointed off into the crowd.
"That's him there. He was 3/4 drunk even before you brought our girls home, though. Don't know how much use he'll be to you now."
"Well," I said hesitantly, "I'm guessing someone is going to need to lock me up until you can get word to the Azzy off in Thamesford." I nodded to the small stone building in the center of town. The mayor looked sideways at me, frowning a bit.
"You want to be locked up?"
"Not particularly," I admitted.
"You can come and go as you please, then," he said.
"The Azzy won't be happy when he hears," I said. "I'd rather not have anyone else go up against the Iron Law because of something I've done. Aiding in the escape of a murderer can be a hanging offense." The big man gave me a long looking over. His eyes lingered a bit on my sword, the worn leather of my boots. I could almost feel him noticing the lack of any serious wounds, despite the fact that I just killed 6 armed men.
"So you'd let us just lock you up?" he asked. "Easy as that?"
I shrugged. He frowned again, then shook his head as if he couldn't make sense of me.
"Well, aren't you just as gentle as a lamb?" he said wonderingly. "But no, I won't lock you up. You haven't done anything less than proper."
"I broke that boy's arm," I said.
"Hmm,"
he rumbled darkly.
"Forgot about that."
He reached into his pocket and brought out halfpenny. He handed it to me.
"Much obliged."
I laughed as I put it in my pocket.
"Here's my thought," he said. "I'll head over and see if I can find the constable. Then I'll explain to him we've got to lock you up. If you've slipped off in the middle of this confusion, we wouldn't hardly be aiding in the escape, would we?"
"It would be negligence in maintenance of the law," I said. "He might take a few lashes for it, or lose his post."
"Shouldn't come to that," the mayor said. "But if it does, he'll be happy to do it. He's Ellie's uncle."
He looked out at the crowd on the street.
"Will 15 minutes be enough for you to slip off in all the confusion?"
"If it's all the same to you," I said, "could you say I disappeared in a strange and mysterious way when your back was turned?" He laughed at this.
"Don't see why not. You need more than 15 minutes on account of it being mysterious and all?"
10 should be a great plenty, I said as I unpacked my loot case and travel sack from Greytail and handed the mayor the reins. "You'd be doing me a favor if you took care of him until Bill is up and about," I said.
"You leaving your horse?" he asked.
"He's just lost his," I shrugged. "And we Rue are used to walking. I wouldn't know what to do with a horse anyway," I said half honestly. The big man gripped the reins and gave me a long look, as if he wasn't quite sure what to make of me.
"Is there anything we can do for you?" he asked at last.
"Remember it was bandits who took them," I said as I turned to leave. "And remember it was one of the Edema Rue who brought them back." Chapter 136 Interlude Close to Forgetting. Quoth held up a hand to Chronicler.
"Let's take a moment, shall we?"
He looked around the dark inn. "I've let myself get a little caught up in the story. I should tend to a few things before it gets any later." The innkeeper came stiffly to his feet and stretched. He lit a candle at the fireplace and moved around the inn, lighting the lamps one by one, driving back the dark by slow degrees.
"I was focused rather closely myself," Chronicler said, standing up and stretching. "What time is it?"
"Late," Bast said. "I'm hungry." Chronicler looked out the dark window into the street.
"I'd have thought you'd have had at least a few folks in for dinner by now. You pulled a good crowd for lunch."
Quoth nodded.
"We would have seen a few of my regulars if not for Shep's funeral."
"Ah."
Chronicler looked down.
"I'd forgotten. Is that something I've kept you two from attending?"
Quoth lit the last lamp behind the bar and blew out his candle.
"Not really," he said. "Bast and I aren't from around these parts, and they're practical folk. They know I have a business to run, such as it is."
"And you don't get along with Abbe Leodin," Bast said.
"And I don't get along with the local priest," Quoth admitted.
"But you should make an appearance, Bast. It will seem odd if you don't."
Bast's eyes darted around nervously.
"I don't want to leave, Reshi."
Quoth smiled warmly at him.
"You should, Bast. Shep was a good man.
Go have a drink to send him off. In fact..."
He bent and rummaged around under the bar for a moment before coming up with a bottle.
"Here. A fine old bottle of brand. Better stuff than anyone around here asks for. Go share it around."
He set it on the bar with a solid sound. Bast took an involuntary step forward. His face conflicted.
"But Reshi, I..."
"Pretty girls dancing, Bast," Quoth said, his voice low and soothing. "Someone on the fiddle, and all of them just glad to be alive. Kicking up their skirts to the music, laughing and a little tipsy, their cheeks all rosy and ready to be kissed."
He gave the heavy brown bottle a nudge, and it slid down the bar toward his student.
"You're my ambassador to the town. I may be stuck minding the shop, but you can be there and make my apologies.
Bast closed his hand around the neck of the bottle. "I'll have one drink," he said, his voice thick with resolve. "And one dance. And one kiss with Katie Miller. And maybe another with the Widow Creel. But that's all." He looked Quoth in the eye. "I'll only be gone half an hour." Quoth gave a warm smile. "I have things to tend to, Bast. I'll cobble together dinner, and we'll give our friend's hand a bit of a rest." Bast grinned and picked up the bottle. "Two dances, then." He bolted for the door, and when he opened it, the wind gusted around him, swirling his hair wildly. "Save me something to eat!" he shouted over his shoulder. The door banged shut. Chronicler gave the innkeeper a curious look. Quoth gave a small shrug. He was getting too tangled up in the story. He can't feel a thing halfway. A little time away will give him some perspective. Besides, I do have dinner to prepare, even if it's only for three. The scribe brought a grimy piece of cloth out of his leather satchel and looked at it with some distaste. "I don't suppose I could trouble you for a clean rag," he asked. Quoth nodded and brought out a white linen cloth from beneath the bar. "Is there anything else you need?" Chronicler stood and walked over to the bar. "If you had some strong spirits, it would be a great help," he said, sounding slightly embarrassed. "I hate to ask, but when I was robbed..." Quoth waved the comment away. "Don't be ridiculous," he said. "I should have asked you yesterday if there was anything you needed." He moved out from behind the bar toward the basement stairs. "I'm assuming wood alcohol would work best." Chronicler nodded, and Quoth disappeared into the basement. The scribe picked up the crisply folded square of linen and rubbed it idly between his fingers. Then his eyes wandered up to the sword hanging high on the wall behind the bar. The gray metal of the blade was striking against the dark wood of the mounting board. Quoth came back up the steps carrying a small clear bottle. "Is there anything else you need? I have a good stock of paper and ink here, too." "It may come to that by tomorrow," Chronicler said. "I've used up most of my paper, but I can grind more ink tonight." "Don't put yourself to the trouble," Quoth said easily. "I have several bottles of fine Aruin ink." "True Aruin ink?" Chronicler asked, surprised. Quoth gave a broad smile and nodded. "That's terribly kind of you," Chronicler said, relaxing a bit. "I'll admit I wasn't looking forward to spending an hour grinding tonight." He gathered up the clear bottle and cloth, then paused. "Would you mind if I ask you a question? Unofficially, as it were?" A smirk curled the corner of Quoth's mouth. "Very well, then, unofficially. I can't help notice that your description of Sasura doesn't..." Chronicler hesitated. "Well, it doesn't quite seem to match the actual sword itself." His eyes flicked to the sword behind the bar. "The handguard isn't what you described." Quoth gave a wide grin. "Well, you're just sharp as anything, aren't you?" "I don't mean to imply," Chronicler said quickly, looking embarrassed. Quoth laughed a rich, warm laugh. The sound of it tumbled around the room, and for a moment, the inn didn't feel empty at all. "No, you're absolutely right." He turned to look at the sword. "This isn't... what did the boy call it this morning?" His eyes went distant for a moment. Then he smiled again. "Kaysera, the poet killer." "I was just curious," Chronicler said apologetically. "Am I supposed to be offended that you're paying attention?" Quoth laughed again. "What fun is there in telling a story if nobody's listening?" He rubbed his hands together eagerly. "Right then, dinner. What would you like? Hot or cold? Soup or stew? I'm a dab hand at pudding, too." They settled on something simple to avoid restoking the stove in the kitchen. Quoth moved briskly around the inn, gathering what was needed. He hummed to himself as he fetched cold mutton and half a hard, sharp cheese from the basement. "These will be a nice surprise for Bast," Quoth grinned at Chronicler as he brought out a jar of brined olives from the pantry. "He can't know we have them, or he'd have eaten them already." He untied his apron, pulling it off over his head. "I think we have a few tomatoes left in the garden, too." Quoth returned after several minutes with his apron wrapped into a bundle. He was spattered with rain, and his hair was in wild disarray. He wore a boyish grin, and at that moment, he looked very little like the somber, slow-moving innkeeper.
"It can't quite decide if it wants to storm," he said, as he set his apron on the bar, carefully removing the tomatoes. "But if it makes up its mind, we're in for a wagon tipper tonight."
He began to hum absent-mindedly while he cut and arranged everything on a broad wooden platter. The door of the waystone opened, and a sudden gust of wind made the lamplight flicker. Two soldiers came in, hunched against the weather, their swords sticking out like tails behind them. Dark spatters of rain spotted the fabric of their blue and white tabards. They dropped their heavy packs, and the shorter of the two pressed his shoulder to the door, forcing it closed against the wind.
"God's teeth!" said the taller one, straightening his clothes. "It's a bad night to be caught in the open."
He was bald on top, with a thick black beard that was flat as a spade. He looked at Quoth.
"Oh, boy," he said cheerfully. "We were glad to see your light. Run and fetch the owner, would you? We need to have a word with him."
Quoth picked his apron up off the bar and ducked his head into it.
"That would be me," he said, clearing his throat as he tied the strings around his waist.
He ran his hands through his tousled hair, smoothing it down. The bearded soldier peered at him, then shrugged.
"Fair enough. Any chance of us getting a spot of dinner?"
The innkeeper gestured to the empty room. "It didn't seem worth putting the kettle on tonight," he said, "but we've got what you see here." The two soldiers strode to the bar. The blonde one ran his hands through his curly hair, shaking a few drops of rain out of it.
"This town looks deader than ditch water," he said.
"We didn't see a single light but this."
"Long harvest day," the innkeeper said, "and there's a wake tonight at one of the nearby farms. The four of us are probably the only folk in town right now." He rubbed his hands together briskly. "Can I interest you fine folk in a drink to take off the chill?" He brought out a bottle of wine and sat it on the bar with a solid, satisfying sound.
"Well, that's a difficulty," the blonde soldier said with a bit of an embarrassed smile. "I'd dearly love a drink, but my friend and I just took the king's coin."
He reached into his pocket and brought out a bright gold coin.
"This is all the money I have on me. I don't suppose you have enough to break a whole royal, would you?"
"I'm stuck with mine, too," the bearded soldier groused. "Most money I've ever had, but it don't spend well in a lump. Most of the towns we've been through could barely make change for a halfpenny."
He chuckled at his own joke. "I should be able to help you out with that," the innkeeper said easily. The two soldiers exchanged a look. The blonde one nodded.
"Right then."
The blonde soldier put the coin back in his pocket.
"Here's the truth. We aren't really going to be stopping for the night."
He picked up a piece of cheese off the bar and took a bite.
"And we aren't going to be paying for anything either."
"Ah," the innkeeper said.
"I see. And if you've got enough money in your purse to change out 2 gold royals,
the bearded one said eagerly,
"then we'll have that off you as well."
The blonde soldier spread his hands in a calming gesture.
"Now this don't need to be any sort of ugly thing. We aren't bad folk. You pass over your purse and we go on our way. No folk get hurt and nothing gets wrecked. It's bound to sting a bit."
He raised an eyebrow at the innkeeper.
"But a little sting beats hell out of getting yourself killed. Am I right?"
The bearded soldier looked over at where Chronicler sat near the hearth.
"This ain't got nothing to do with you either,"
he said grimly, his beard waggling as he spoke.
"We don't want anything of yours. You just stay sat where you're at and don't get feisty on us."
Chronicler shot a glance to the man behind the bar, but the innkeeper's eyes were fixed on the two soldiers. The blonde one took another bite of cheese while his eyes wandered around the inn.
"Young man like you is doing pretty well for himself. You'll be doing just as well after we're gone. But if you start trouble, we'll feed you your teeth, wreck up the place, and you'll still be out your purse."
He dropped the rest of the cheese on the bar and clapped his hands together briskly. He smiled.
"So, are we all going to be civilized folk?"
"That seems reasonable,"
Quoth said as he walked out from behind the bar. He moved slowly and carefully, the way you would approach a skittish horse.
"I'm certainly no barbarian."
Quoth reached down and removed his purse from his pocket. He held it out in one hand. The blonde soldier walked over to him, swaggering just a bit. He took hold of the purse and hefted it appreciatively. He turned to smile at his friend.
"You see, I told you."
In a smooth motion, Quoth stepped forward and struck the man hard in the jaw. The soldier staggered and fell to one knee. The purse arced through the air and hit the floorboards with a solid, metallic thud. Before the soldier could do more than shake his head, Quoth stepped forward and calmly kicked him in the shoulder. Not a sharp kick of the sort that breaks bones, but a hard kick that sent him sprawling backward. The man landed hard on the floor, rolling to a stop in a messy tangle of arms and legs. The other soldier stepped past his friend, grinning wide under his beard. He was taller than Quoth, and his fists were broad knots of scar and knuckle.
"Right, Cully,"
he said, dark satisfaction in his voice.
"You're getting a kickin' now."
He snapped out a quick punch, but Quoth stepped aside and kicked out sharply, hitting the soldier just above the knee. The bearded man grunted in surprise, stumbling slightly. Then Quoth stepped close, caught the bearded man's shoulder, gripped his wrist, and twisted his outstretched arm at an awkward angle. The big man was forced to bend over, grimacing in pain. Then he jerked his arm roughly out of the innkeeper's grip. Quoth had half a moment to look startled before the soldier's elbow caught him in the temple. The innkeeper staggered backward, trying to gain a little distance and a moment to clear his head, but the soldier followed close after him, fists raised, waiting for an opening. Before Quoth could regain his balance, the soldier stepped close and drove a fist hard into his gut. The innkeeper let out a pained huff of air, and as he started to double over, the soldier swung his other fist into the side of the innkeeper's face, snapping Quoth's head to the side and sending him reeling. Quoth managed to keep his feet by grabbing a nearby table for support. Blinking, he threw a wild punch to keep the bearded man at a distance, but the soldier merely brushed it aside and caught hold of the innkeeper's wrist in one huge hand, easy as a father might grab hold of a wayward child in the street. Blood running down the side of his face, Quoth struggled to free his wrist. Dazed, he made a quick motion with both hands, then repeated it, trying to pull away. His eyes half-focused and dull with confusion, he looked down at his wrist and made the motion again, but his hands merely scrabbled uselessly at the soldier's scarred fist. The bearded soldier eyed the stupefied innkeeper with amused curiosity, then reached out and slapped him hard on the side of the head.
"You're almost a bit of a scrapper, boy," he said. "You actually stuck one on me."
Behind them, the blonde soldier was slowly getting to his feet.
"Little bastard sucker punched me!"
The big soldier yanked the innkeeper's wrist so he stumbled forward.
"Say you're sorry, Cully."
The innkeeper blinked blearily, opened his mouth as if he were about to speak, then staggered. Or rather, he seemed to stagger. Halfway through, the stumbling motion became deliberate, and the innkeeper stomped down hard with the heel of his foot, aiming at the soldier's boot. At the same time, he snapped his forehead down at the bearded man's nose. But the big man merely laughed, moving his head to the side as he jerked the innkeeper off balance again by his wrist.
"None of that,"
he chided, backhanding Quoth across the face. The innkeeper let out a yelp and lifted a hand to his bleeding nose. The soldier grinned and casually drove a knee hard into the innkeeper's groin. Quoth doubled over, first gasping soundlessly, then making a series of choked, retching noises. Moving casually, the soldier let go of Quoth's wrist, then reached out and picked up the bottle of wine from the bar. Gripping it by the neck, he swung it like a club. When it hit the side of the innkeeper's head, it made a solid, almost metallic sound. Quoth crumpled bonelessly to the floor. The big man looked at the bottle of wine curiously before setting it back on the bar. Then he bent, grabbed the innkeeper's shirt, and dragged his limp body out onto the open floor. He nudged the unconscious body with a foot until it stirred sluggishly.
"Said I'd give you a kickin', boy,"
the soldier grunted, and drove his foot hard into Quoth's side. The blonde soldier walked over, rubbing at the side of his face.
"Had to get all clever, didn't you?"
he said, spitting on the floor. He drew back his boot and landed a hard kick of his own. The innkeeper drew a sharp, hissing breath, but made no other sound.
"And you?"
The bearded soldier pointed a thick finger at Chronicler.
I've got more than one boot. Would you like to see the other? I've already skint my knuckles. It's no bother to me if you want to lose a couple teeth.
Chronicler looked around and seemed genuinely surprised to find himself standing. He lowered himself slowly back into his chair. The blonde soldier limped off to reclaim the purse from where it had fallen, while the big bearded man remained standing over Quoth.
I suppose you figured you had to try,
he said to the crumpled body, giving him another solid kick in the side.
Damn fool! Pasty little innkeeper against two of the king's own!
He shook his head and spat again.
Honestly, who do you think you are?
Curled on the floor, Quoth began to make a low, rhythmic sound. It was a dry, quiet noise that scratched around the edges of the room. Quoth paused as he drew a painful breath. The bearded soldier frowned and kicked him again.
I asked you a question, Cully.
The innkeeper made the same noise again, louder than before. Only then did it become obvious that he was laughing. Each low, broken chuckle sounded like he was coughing up a piece of shattered glass. Despite that, it was a laugh, full of dark amusement, as if the red-haired man had heard a joke that only he could understand. It went on for some time. The bearded soldier shrugged and drew back his foot again. Chronicler cleared his throat, and the two men turned to look at him. In the interest of keeping things civilized, he said, I feel I should mention that the innkeeper sent his assistant out on an errand. He should be back soon. The bearded soldier slapped his companion on the chest with the back of his hand.
He's right. Let's get out of here.
Wait a moment, the blonde soldier said.
He hurried back to the bar and snatched the bottle of wine.
Right. Let's go.
The bearded soldier grinned and went behind the bar, stepping on the innkeeper's body rather than over it. He grabbed a random bottle, knocking over half a dozen others as he did so. They rolled and spun on the counter between the two huge barrels, a tall sapphire-colored one slowly toppling over the edge to shatter on the floor. In less than a minute, the men had gathered up their packs and were out the door. Chronicler hurried over to where Quoth lay on the wooden floor. The red-haired man was already struggling into a sitting position.
Well, that was embarrassing, Quoth said.
He touched his bloody face and looked at his fingers. He chuckled again, a jagged, joyless sound.
Forgot who I was there for a minute.
Are you all right? Chronicler asked.
Quoth touched his scalp speculatively.
I'll need a stitch or two, I suspect.
What can I do to help?
Chronicler asked, shifting his weight from foot to foot.
Don't hover over me.
Quoth pushed himself awkwardly to his feet, then slumped into one of the tall stools at the bar.
If you want, you can fetch me a glass of water, and maybe a wet cloth.
Chronicler scurried back into the kitchen. There was the sound of frantic rummaging, followed by several things falling to the ground. Quoth closed his eyes and leaned heavily against the bar.
Why is the door open? Bast called as he stepped through the doorway. It's cold as a witch's tit in here.
He froze, his expression stricken.
Reshi? What happened? What happened?
Ah, Bast, Quoth said. Close the door, would you?
Bast hurried over, a numb expression on his face. Quoth sat in a stool at the bar, his face swollen and bloody. Chronicler stood next to him, dabbing awkwardly at the innkeeper's scalp with a damp cloth.
I might need to prevail on you for a few stitches, Bast, Quoth said, if it wouldn't be too much trouble.
Reshi, Bast repeated. What happened?
Devin and I got into a bit of an argument, Quoth said, nodding at the scribe, about the proper use of the subjunctive mood. It got a little heated toward the end.
Chronicler looked up at Bast, then blanched, and took several quick steps backward.
He's joking, he said quickly, holding up his hands. It was soldiers.
Quoth chuckled painfully to himself. There was blood on his teeth. Bast looked around the empty taproom.
What did you do with them?
Not much, Bast, the innkeeper said. They're probably miles away by now.
Was there something wrong with them, Reshi? Like the one last night? Bast asked.
Just soldiers, Bast, Kvolf said. Just two of the king's own.
Bast's face went ashen. What? He asked. Reshi, why did you let them do this?
Kvolf gave Bast an incredulous look. He gave a brief, bitter laugh, then stopped with a wince, sucking air through his teeth.
Well, they seemed like such clean and virtuous boys, he said, his voice mocking. I thought, why not let these nice fellows rob me, then beat me to a pulp?
Bast's expression was full of dismay.
But you...
Kvolf wiped away the blood that was threatening to run into his eye, then looked at Bast as if he were the stupidest creature drawing breath in the entire world.
What? He demanded. What do you want me to say?
Two soldiers, Reshi?
Yes, Kvolf shouted. Not even two. Apparently one thick-fisted thug is all it takes to beat me half to death.
He glared furiously at Bast, throwing up his arms.
What is it going to take to shut you up? Do you want a story? Do you want to hear the details?
Bast took a step backward at the outburst. His face went even paler, his expression panicked. Kvolf let his arms fall heavily to his sides.
Quit expecting me to be something I'm not, he said, still breathing hard.
He hunched his shoulders and rubbed at his eyes, smearing blood across his face. He let his head sag wearily.
God's mother, why can't you just leave me alone?
Bast stood as still as a startled hart, his eyes wide. Silence flooded the room, thick and bitter as a lungful of smoke. Kvothe drew a slow breath, the only motion in the room.
I'm sorry, Bast, he said without looking up. I'm just in a little pain right now. It got the better of me. Give me a moment, and I'll have it sorted out.
Still looking down, Kvothe closed his eyes and drew several slow, shallow breaths. When he looked up, his expression was chagrined.
I'm sorry, Bast, he said. I didn't mean to snap at you.
A touch of the color returned to Bast's cheeks. Some of the tension left his shoulders as he gave a nervous smile. Kvothe took the damp cloth from Chronicler and wiped the blood away from his eye again.
I'm sorry I interrupted you before, Bast. What is it you were about to ask me?
Bast hesitated, then said,
You killed 5 Skrael not 3 days ago, Reshi.
He waved toward the door.
What's some thug compared to that?
I picked the time and place for the Skrael rather carefully, Bast, Kvolf said. And I didn't exactly dance away unscathed, either.
Chronicler looked up, surprised.
You were hurt? He asked. I didn't know. You didn't look it.
A small, wry smile twisted the corner of Kvolf's mouth.
Old habits die hard, he said. I do have a reputation to maintain. Besides, we heroes are only hurt in properly dramatic ways. It rather ruins the story if you find out Bast had to knit about 10 feet of stitches into me after the fight.
Realization broke over Bast's face like a sunrise.
Of course, he said, his voice thick with relief. I forgot! You're still hurt from the Skrael. I knew it had to be something like that.
Kvothe looked at the floor, every line of his body sagging and weary.
Bast, he began.
I knew it, Reshi, he said emphatically. There's no way some thug could get the better of you.
Kvothe drew a shallow breath, then let it out in a rush.
I'm sure that's it, Bast, he said easily. I expect I could have taken them both if I'd been fresh.
Bast's expression grew uncertain again. He turned to face Chronicler.
How could you let this happen? He demanded.
It's not his fault, Bast, Kvolf said absentmindedly. I started the fight.
He put a few fingers into his mouth and felt around gingerly. His fingers came out of his mouth bright with blood.
I expect I'm going to lose this tooth, he mused.
You will not lose your tooth, Reshi! Bass said fiercely. You will not!
Quoth made a slight motion with his shoulders, as if trying to shrug without moving any more of his body than he needed to. It doesn't matter much in the grand scheme of things, Bast. He pressed the cloth to his scalp, then looked at it. I probably won't need those stitches, either. He pushed himself upright on the stool. Let's have our dinner and get back to the story. He raised an eyebrow at Chronicler. If you're still up for it, of course. Chronicler stared at him blankly.
Reshi, Bast said worried. You're a mess.
He reached out.
Let me look at your eyes.
I'm not concussed, Bast, Quoth said irritated. I've got 4 broken ribs, a ringing in my ears, and a loose tooth. I have a few minor scalp wounds that look more serious than they really are. My nose is bloody but not broken, and tomorrow I will be a vast tapestry of bruises.
Quoth gave the faint shrug again.
Still, I've had worse.
Besides, they reminded me of something I was close to forgetting. I should probably thank them for that. He prodded at his jaw speculatively and worked his tongue around in his mouth.
Perhaps not a terribly warm thanks.
Reshi, you need stitches, Bast said.
And you need to let me do something about that tooth. Quoth climbed off the stool.
I'll just chew on the other side for a few days.
Bast took hold of Quoth's arm. His eyes were hard and dark.
Sit down, Reshi.
It was nothing like a request. His voice was low and sudden, like a throb of distant thunder.
Sit down.
Quoth sat. Chronicler nodded approvingly and turned to Bast.
What can I do to help?
Stay out of my way, Bast said brusquely, and keep him in this chair until I get back. He strode upstairs. There was a moment of silence.
So, Chronicler said, subjunctive mood.
At best, Quoth said, it is a pointless thing. It needlessly complicates the language. It offends me.
Oh, come now,
Chronicler said, sounding slightly offended.
The subjunctive is the heart of the hypothetical. In the right hands,
he broke off as Bass stormed back into the room, scowling and carrying a small wooden box.
Bring me water, Bast said imperiously to Chronicler. Fresh from the rain barrel, not from the pump. Then I need milk from the icebox, some warmed honey, and a broad bowl. Then clean up this mess and stay out of my way.
Bast washed the cut on Quoth's scalp, then threaded one of his own hairs through a bone needle and laced 4 tight stitches through the innkeeper's skin more smoothly than a seamstress.
Open your mouth, Bast said. Then peered inside, frowning while he prodded one of the back teeth with a finger.
He nodded to himself. Bast handed Quoth the glass of water.
Rinse out your mouth, Reshi. Do it a couple of times and spit the water back into the cup.
Quoth did. When he finished, the water was red as wine. Chronicler returned with a bottle of milk. Bast sniffed it, then poured a splash into a wide pottery bowl. He added a dollop of honey and swirled it around to mix it. Finally, he dipped his finger into the glass of bloody water, drew it out, and let a single drop fall into the bowl. Bast swirled it again and handed Quoth the bowl.
Take a mouthful of this, he said. Don't swallow it. Hold it in your mouth until I tell you.
His expression curious, Quoth tipped the bowl and took a mouthful of the milk. Bast took a mouthful as well. Then he closed his eyes for a long moment, a look of intense concentration on his face. Then he opened his eyes. He brought the bowl close to Quoth's mouth and pointed into it. Quoth spat out his mouthful of milk. It was a perfect, creamy white. Bast brought the bowl to his own mouth and spat. It was a frothy pink. Quoth's eyes widened.
Bast, he said, you shouldn't...
Bast made a sharp gesture with one hand. His eyes still hard.
I did not ask for your opinion, Reshi.
The innkeeper looked down, uncomfortable.
It's more than you should do, Bast.
The dark young man reached out and laid a gentle hand on the side of his master's face. For a moment, he looked tired, weary through to the bone. Bast shook his head slowly, wearing